What time is it, Cliff?
It's time for the Gezi.
Here's a little message just to let you know. You're listening to Radio, Radio. This is the Cliff Howarth Radio Show.
And then intro music tells you it is time for the Gezi, and I'd like to welcome my very, very special guest here tonight. Finally, I've got him. Ian Prowse, good evening.
Hiya, mate. How are you doing?
I'm all right. It's taken a while. I've badgered you to death, haven't I, in the end? I've got you here.
Yeah, I've relented. No, it's. I'm glad that we've finally been able to organise it.
I know
you've been asking for me to come in for a long time, so...
I know. Do you know what's funny? Because when I started these things, I made up a wish list, and yours was the first name on the list. I thought, I've got to get Ian Prowse. I've chipped away.
No, it's an honour.
And I've had many people on here, and they've all been roped in and come along. And your mate Alan O'Hare was here not so long ago as well.
Okay.
And he said, yeah, I've got to get Prowse on. I said, well, I know I've got to get Prowse on. And I've got him, and he's here. So anyway, a little bit of background. What we're going to do, we're going to have a little bit of a chat about everything you've got going on. It's such an exciting time for you. Touring with Elvis Costello coming up very, very soon, 28th of February at the Olympia.
Yeah, just a month ago.
No
pressure.
No pressure whatsoever. So looking forward to that. And I'm glad to say I've got my tickets for that as well, so I will be there. And as well as that, just on the back of a brand new album coming out, there is also another album coming out, which we will chat about shortly as well. So just to give anyone a little bit of background, who may be listening and may be listening to you for the first time, Frontman from Amsterdam, which is the first time I saw you.
Yeah.
Before that, Pelé, and also your solo stuff. So give us a little bit about your background, how you got into doing this. What made you pick up that guitar and say, I want to do this?
I consider myself incredibly fortunate, is that I kind of came of age as a, you know, when you're a teenager and you're trying to find something that's specifically yours, you know, your generation. And I was so fortunate that in like 79, 1980, we'd already had like 3 years of what I still consider to be the greatest musical explosion ever. So we were treated to, Blondie, Talking Heads, Ian Jory, Stranglers, The Jam, The Clash, The Sex Pistols, you know, Devo, Elvis Costello, the Pretenders. The list was endless. There was just new band after new band coming out every week. Yeah. And there was something about them all, because it was part of the punk and new wave explosion, it struck me that they were all singing and playing with conviction, which is something that just hadn't been happening in, you know, nothing had caught my eye or ear in the music that I was listening to on the radio as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe because I wasn't old enough, you know.
Yeah.
I just listened to whatever my mum was playing or whatever was on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
So I liked music, but I didn't absolutely love it until, you know, Elvis Costello, Joe Strummer and Paul Weller came along and completely turned my head with their music. And also, I didn't have anybody, I didn't know anybody who played musical instruments. There was nobody in the family, there was none lying around, there was nobody to refer to. So they were like my remote controllers, you know. They were recently realised that, you know, I didn't know, when the song came out, I didn't know what going underground meant. So I found out. I didn't know what Oliver's Army were, so I found out. I had no idea who the Sandinistas were, so I found out. So I was being educated, in conviction music. And whatever sort of alchemy took place in my 14, 15-year-old self at that time is still the fuel upon which I run as an artist and musician to this day.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thing.
And shows. That certainly shows in your live stuff as well. Were you lucky enough to see any of these?
Yeah. I, I went to see The Jam at Liverpool Empire. I got taken. I wasn't cool enough to go, you know, let's go and see The Jam. I just kind of tagged along with the lads in the street.
Yeah.
Street I'm from is a place called Forge Road in Little Sutton, and we were the first, it was a council house cul-de-sac, and we were the first family to move in, mm-hmm. as were all the other families, and every single one of them was a Liverpool overspill family. Mm-hmm. So it was, we were all, the kids were the same age, we were all brought up together.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know you see these Facebook memes or people talking about the past, you know, we didn't have mobile phones and all this sort of stuff. But that the one about we'd go out in the morning, you know, at 9 o'clock and come back when it got dark, that is actually true. That's what I did.
You know, me too.
Playing football and... I think British Bulldog was it? That was what it was called at the time.
Yeah.
And going out, because we were on the edge of the town, so we could walk out into the countryside as well and go conquering and such things. And so that was... we were all grown up together. So when the punk rock and a new wave thing hit, it spread really quickly amongst my age group. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't either cool enough or you know, sussed out enough to get onto it. My mate Blackie, who lived across the road from me, he was buying all those great punk records.
He
bought Handsworth Revolution by the Steel Pulse and he bought New Boots and Panties, and he'd buy a new record every week, and I'd go, wow. I didn't have the wherewithal. Cool. But the one band I did latch onto was The Jam.
Yeah.
And then when they came to play in Liverpool, everybody was buying tickets, so I got one. I think I got one, like, bought for me. Did you come into this, you know? And, of course, I think everybody remembers their first concert just because it's the first time you're ever exposed to such loud volumes, lights, you know, a whole different world is in front of your eyes, and it's really a bit terrifying as well.
Yeah.
You know, so when the three members of The Jam walked on stage, I can still see it now, you know. Weller had a black suit on, and he was pencil thin, mm-hmm. you know. And he had a black shirt on and a bright green tie. And they played All Mod Cons, the title track of that album, first. And by the end of that song, that was me.
Yeah.
Finished.
Yeah.
That's my life forever now.
Amazing. You know. Amazing. Yeah.
And that's what it was.
Fantastic. I was lucky enough to see them in the Royal Court. It was actually on my 21st birthday, because I remember, because they were in our house. They had a party set up for me, and I said, I'm going to see The Jam.
Yeah.
And I went with my mate from Manchester, and we were at the Royal Court. It was fantastic. I just remember down in the tube station at midnight as a standout for me.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
They were just
the
amazing.
Whole thing was just an assault upon your senses, you know. And then... the specific thing, because he was singing about the world that I was from, which was a council estate, ordinary sort of youthful lives. I always remember every time I saw The Jam, there was nobody in the audience over 20.
No,
you know, no one, and it was how, and he was only 18, you know, at the time when he started.
Yeah, was young.
I think he split The Jam up when he was 22, which is just
amazing,
sickening,
isn't it?
Sickeningly talented.
I know.
And The Jam opened all the doors for me to go into that world. But then I would kind of, you know, I think the next band that I really, really loved was The Stranglers.
Yeah.
Because they had a massive wave of popularity, and they were kind of on the down. They'd gone a bit. They were on a bit of a downward slope. And I love underdogs. I kind of latched onto them, and I love them, and I still love them to this day. And The Jam became really popular, and they weren't my band anymore.
No.
And even though I sneakily liked them, I told everybody that they'd gone off the rail, which was a load of rubbish, obviously. But I did that classic thing of, you know, I got into a band when at the very beginning, and then when everybody else gets into them, it's three times before the plectrum crows. I denied ever liking them. You know, there you go.
Sure.
But and as I said, at the same time, you know, you had the Buzzcocks and Magazine.
It was a real exciting time, wasn't it?
Oh, all these bands, and then of course, you know, punk then New Wave, and as soon as New Wave was starting to falter, we had Two Tone, mm-hmm. you know, a mod revival,
yeah.
and then on top of that was like the post-punk stuff, arguably better, you know, yeah. in some Echo and the Bunnymen.
Around the early 80s stuff,
Early 80s, yeah. you know, and I was obviously a sworn enemy of New Romanticism mm-hmm. and and all of that, and Duran Duran and Spandau Ballet, but at least it was coming it was, out,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
And then it seemed to be a conveyor belt of great, great British and mm-hmm. Irish bands, you know, mm-hmm. Of which was endlessly inspirational for me. Mm-hmm.
And some great Liverpool bands as well around the time.
Oh yeah, you know. The thing is as well, if I'm 14 and 15, and I was always in and out of going into Liverpool and coming out again, and it was. The whole place was awesome.
Mm.
You know, you would you'd go down Matthew Street, and I wasn't old enough to do Eric's or anything like that, but you would see Pete Burns,
yeah.
and you'd catch sight of Ian McCulloch.
Yeah,
and I'd be, wow, you know, this is it's close to home now.
It is, yeah.
They're not like London bands like the Jam and the Clash.
Yeah,
seem like a long, long way away, but and the Stranglers, but. All of a sudden, you'd see these post-punk bands which were there. And, of course, I think the first great sort of pop record of that whole era was Reward by the Teardrop Explodes.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're kind of hearing that and going, that's how you do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I've always had that.
Brilliant.
I've always had that with me, that sense of you've got to write great pop songs as well as everything else.
Of course.
Yeah.
Okay, so... great to chat to you, but we're going to do some music as well. We always on this Gezi slot, we always ask our guests if they could play some songs. And I know that you've had a few requests in, and I've had a couple sent in to me as well. So the ball is in your court. Whatever, whatever you fancy playing. Dave Hughes, who again is my mate, who got into broadcast, and do you know what? I thought he was going to ask for Does This Train Stop, and he hasn't.
What's he asked for?
Ian has asked it. John, he's stuck in his mind that I'll play next week. I'm sorry. Ask him what Jam record has stuck in his mind, and I will play it next week. Okay, and he's also asked for Is There a God After All? Oh, and he played that today. He played that on the show, Is There a God After All?
Okay.
So I'm glad Dave Hughes is listening. So he's a good fella. He's the man who got me into broadcasting.
Well, I tell you what, why don't I play it?
Okay.
Why don't I play the Jam song?
Okay.
Distant echo of faraway voices, but in faraway trains to take them home to the ones that they love and who love them forever. The glazed dirty steps repeat my own and reflect my thoughts. Partially naked, except for toffee wrappers and this morning's papers. Mr. Jones got run down. Headlines of death, the song they tell of tomorrow. Madmen on the rampage, and I'm down in the tube station at midnight. Fumble for change. I pull out the queen, smiling, beguiling. I put in the money. I pull out a plum behind me. Whispers in the shadows, rough blazing voices, hating, waiting. Hey boy, they shout, have you got any money? And I say, I've a little money and a takeaway curry. I'm on the way home to my wife. She'll be lining up the cutlery, and you know she's expecting me, polishing her glasses and pulling out the cork. I'm down in the tube station at midnight.
first felt a fist, and then a kick. I could now smell her breath. They smelt of pubs and wormwood scrubs and too many right-wing meetings. My life swam around me. It took a look and it drowned me in its own existence. Smell of brown leather, it mingled in with the weather. It filled my eyes, ears, nose and mouth. They blocked all my senses, couldn't see, hear, speak any longer. I'm down in the tube station at midnight. Don't wanna go down in the tube station at midnight. The last thing that I saw was lay there on the floor. Jesus says, painted by an atheist, not around a British rail poster red, having a way day, a cheap holiday, a do it today. Of my life, I thought about my wife. They took the keys, she'll think it's me. I'm down in the tube station at midnight. The wine will be flat and the curry's gone cold. I'm down in the tube station at midnight. Oh, I wanna go down in the tube station at midnight. Oh,
absolutely fantastic. That was Ian Prowse live on Vintage Radio with, of course, Down in the Tube Station at Midnight, the Jam. And what a song. In fact, the song that stuck in my head from when I saw them playing live. So thank you so much for playing that for us. They are Dave Hughes. I hope you enjoyed that. That is the song that you asked for. And that will, I'm sure you'll dig that out in the amongst your playlist and play that next week as well. So thank you so much for that. The next song that we will do in a little bit will be live on Facebook. So if you're listening to this on Vintage Radio and you've got Facebook, have a little look. Stay tuned in, but have a little look on Facebook soon, because the next song I'm going to ask Ian if he'll do that live for us, and you'll be able to watch as well as listen. Okay, right, let me just have a little check of my playlist, because I'm sure Down in the Tube Station was on my playlist, so I'm going to make sure I don't play that now. Okay, that was even better, so fab version. Thank you so much for doing that.
He was 18 when he wrote it. That's the crazy thing, you know. Yeah,
so much energy in that. It's just amazing, absolutely amazing. Amazing band, but amazing.
I think Radio 1 banned it as well because of the violence in the song, but obviously it's an anti violence.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a, you know, it's crying out against people getting themselves into situations in you know, public places.
Yeah,
being chased by thugs. I mean, it's happened to all of us. You know, we've all been in some dodgy situations, especially when you're younger. You know.
Yeah.
How they miss the message, I do not know.
Typical of the BBC, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, they banned so many, the Stranglers were forever being banned for one reason or the other. And ironically, the thing that they probably should have banned them for, they didn't, which was Golden Brown.
Golden Brown.
So there you go. remember Duchess being banned because it was filmed in a church, the promo video, and you think, okay.
Yeah.
So what about? Okay, a couple of questions coming in. Sounds really good, by the way. This is my brother Mike, who's listening in and says to say hello.
Hi, Mike.
And he says, when did you first get into Springsteen, and did this change your approach to songwriting?
We always had Springsteen in the house. We always had the Born to Run album.
Mm-hmm.
We borrowed it off my cousin, and I always remember, and we played it, you know, and I liked it as well. But I didn't make that leap into obsession where I dwell at the moment. And that came with the Tunnel of Love album in 1987.
Okay.
So I'd gone shopping with my mate Grant Hartley, and he bought the album, and he said, I'm going on holiday. Do you want to borrow it for a week while I'm on holiday? So I borrowed it and played it, and it's still to this day my favourite Springsteen album.
All right.
Because it's the one album where he turns that beautiful attention to detail that he has on himself,
mm-hmm.
you know, and a set of heartbreak songs, love songs, I still don't think has been bettered, you know. Walk Like a Man, One Step Up, When You're Alone, Valentine's Day. They're still, you know, my favourite set of Bruce songs. So from that, I kind of worked backwards. I then bought the box set.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, listening to those live versions of Satan the City. Mm. Yeah, Growing Up, Spirit in the Night, songs I didn't know. Was just mind-blowing by the musicianship, you know. So that was in 87, and I think the Fishman's Blues Waterboys album came out in 1988. Mm-hmm. And those two albums were the albums which made me be a much better songwriter, because I got focused then. I'd been writing a lot of songs trying to get somewhere, but I was kind of either semi-mimicking other music, or I just wasn't writing strong enough songs. I didn't until the Celtic Soul thing came into me, and it felt so natural and it felt like home, you know, musically speaking. Then I think I wrote Fireworks first, and from that moment on I'd just taken that little step up, and that was when so between those two albums, Tunnel of Love and Fisherman's Blues, they were the ones. And then, you know, ever since then, Springsteen's informed just about every professional choice I've ever made. And I you know, it doesn't bother me at all to tell people how much I love him.
Yeah.
He's been an important part of me life.
Of course, yeah.
You know.
Of course. And you've met him.
I met him, yeah.
Yeah. I saw that. Brilliant.
He was, I've been reading about him for 25 years up until I met him. He's about 5'10", so he's not, you know, I've got things like Springsteen's only 5'2" or something.
Yeah,
he's
not.
He's 5'10". He's about an inch taller than me. He reminded me of my dad when I met him, because he's older than you look.
Mm.
And he's kind of got, he's got like a kind of an Irish sort of face, and he's older. And he just reminded me of my dad, the way that his face was. And he was absolutely lovely. Showed him a photograph of Rosalita, my daughter.
Yeah.
And he went, "Man, she's adorable." And we asked him, "Is he coming to Liverpool?"
Yeah.
And he said he would absolutely love to. And if one more person from within the Liverpool organisation secretly tells me that he's definitely coming to Anfield, I'm going to scream. Okay. So apparently that's going to happen.
Oh, cool.
So
that will be great. That will be great. I look forward to that.
Ruined all of your confidences, but no names shall be mentioned. It's just a rumour at the moment.
Okay.
So
keep an eye on that one.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's. I think it's just his the way that he approaches songwriting as well.
Yeah.
And it's something. The main key thing I've taken from him is to try and keep the standard of your work up.
Yeah.
You know, most bands tend to fizzle, or songwriters tend to fizzle and fade out after their first few records. And, you know, Bruce released an album last year with Western Stars.
Mm-hmm.
And it was four or five brilliant songs.
Standouts, yeah.
You know, fabulous songwriting of where he is now in the world, you know, on his emotional journey through life. True to where he is now, you know. And I love that. And that's the kind of thing that I tried to do with Here I Lie last year.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that was an important thing, that we had a bunch of songs which could stand up to anything I've been doing since the very first Pelé tracks, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Well, I mean, that come across in the Ballad of North John Street. I mean, I love songs that tell a story. You get the imagery of what's going on. And that, for me, I mean, when I heard that, I just thought, oh, wow, yeah. And then I saw the video.
Well, I think, you know, the war here, you know, where we are in this studio.
Mm.
I sometimes just wander down the streets of either in Birkenhead or in Liverpool. And I just think, what was it like on those nights when the Blitz was going on? How
I know.
Just terrifying. And I don't think, we kind of don't talk about it as much as you might, you know.
No.
Liverpool likes to talk about its past, and it's very sentimental. Merseyside is very sentimental. But there's something about the Blitz in the Second World War doesn't get mentioned as much as you might think, considering 3,000 people perished and the horror of it all. And maybe it's been put to the back of the minds of the people who suffered it.
Yeah.
And they just don't want to talk about it or something. No. So I wrote the Ballad of North John Street with that in mind, with... You know, and you know, when I was growing up, my aunties, our Eileen and my auntie Brenda, they would tell me about when they got evacuated out to farms in Wales.
My mum does the same. My mum does.
You know, and I love it.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it.
I know.
And then My dad wasn't old enough, because he was born during the Blitz, so he had to stay here, you know. And I just think that's crazy. Imagine how terrified my nan must have been with the new child and hearing. Well, she was deaf, so she wouldn't have heard it, but she would have certainly felt the terror around.
Yeah.
What was going on in the city?
I know.
So they deserved a song, I thought.
Yeah,
you know.
You've done them proud with it as well. Yeah. That's a great song. I've got another question come through from David Nixon, who is a good friend of mine, and he says, "Hiya, Cliff. When and how did the brilliant Chris Howard come to Ian's attention?"
Ah, right. Yeah,
he's a top man, Chris.
How did I was. I'd had the same keyboard player for 10 years, and he became a dad, and he couldn't. His head fell off. So, God
Kevin,
bless Kev. Yeah, and he was brilliant, and he had to go and do that, you know. And so I was thinking, who am I going to get? And it's always a worry when you lose one of your soldiers, one of your loyal soldiers. And I think I saw somebody on Facebook asking for a keyboard player, and I think Chris Howard replied to it saying, "I'm available." So I think I sent him a message saying, "I'm looking for something, mate," not knowing anything at all about him. And we got together the week after and played. I always send anybody who's going to play music with me fireworks. Mm-hmm. They can play fireworks, they're okay. And he played it perfectly. And I had no idea that he had everything else in his armory,
right.
Which is he's an amazing performer.
Yeah.
We call him the kid. Yeah. Tony Kiley, our producer, goes, "Let's get the kid in on this track," because he's like the maestro.
Yeah,
and he can play everything.
He's great, isn't
he? Hate him.
He is amazing. Yeah. He's just unreal.
Well, he's one of those people as well. You know, who've come into. Liverpool has acted as a magnet because it's Music City, and he's come into Liverpool to look for work, to look for musicians, to look for the experience of living life as a musician, because it's difficult, you know, with the collapse of the music industry sales wise it's very difficult for musicians to make a living.
Yeah.
But it can be done. You just have to be as good as Chris Howard.
Oh yeah, he is a top guy.
So it's great having him on board.
Yeah, oh, he's brilliant as well. Yeah. Thank you, Dave Nixon, for that question as well. A question about your collaboration with Elvis Costello on this Searchers cover that you did for the Number Ones album, that?
Yeah, the Number Ones
Don't
album.
Don't Throw Your Love Away.
It was on EMI Records in 2008.
Yeah. Just saying, how did that come up? If I remember rightly, you didn't do that together, did you? Wasn't it done separately?
Yeah.
Well,
he chose a song.
Right.
He originally chose Little Children, mm-hmm. and we thought better of that.
Yeah.
Within the modern climate. And because he loves all of that. You know, he's very familiar with the whole Merseybeat scene. And they'd asked us to do it, Martin O'Shea, who started the Number One project, and we were doing the big show at the arena as well. And so they asked Elvis and us to do it together, and because we'd already worked together on a few things, me and Elvis got to it, and we did basically put it together via transatlantic phone calls. And he just had his twins, so we were. I'm trying to talk to him while he's giving some instructions about the feel of what we want. You know, we didn't want to do a chirpy version of the song like the original. Mm-hmm. Wanted to give it a bit more weight underneath. You know, and I'm talking to him, and the phone keeps going down. I can hear him changing nappies.
Oh my God.
And screaming. As the two lads were running round, you know. But it was great. It was great fun. And when it all got glued and put together, we were all really happy with how it came out. Because it was, and that's mainly thanks to Johnny Barlow, who plays guitar in Amsterdam, and Tony Kiley produced it.
Mm-hmm.
They managed to infuse it with that extra bit of melancholy.
Yeah, it's a different slant on it, isn't it?
It really is a different thing. And of course, you know, when you first you release a record on EMI, and there it is, your singing, and then the person singing with you is Elvis Costello. That's a bit cosmic.
Oh wow, I know. And you become good friends as well.
Yeah.
And there's a tour coming up, which we mentioned very briefly earlier. How did that come about? Where you got to?
Basically the Here I Lie album, I guess, mm-hmm. but of last year brought the tour about, because I'd sent him a copy via my mate Chris Holden. Mm-hmm. Chris Holden is has been working for Elvis for ages, and we're really good mates. And he said, "Send it over to Elvis." So all right, yeah. So he was one of the first people to listen to it, and he just really, really liked it.
He got it, didn't he?
He got it completely. Yeah. And we knew we'd done a strong bit of work, but you're always worried when you played it to your friends and everything. But all the reactions we were getting back were really, really positive. And I think basically that was kind of in Elvis's mind. Mm-hmm. And then via, you know, I spoke to him via email, said, if you need anybody, and then Chris was doing his bit at his end. And I thought we'd probably get opening slot at the Liverpool show. Mm-hmm. And then, lo and behold, they give us the whole tour.
It's amazing, isn't it? Amazing.
I'm still pinching myself now. But, you know, I've done lots of support tours before. Back in the day, and more recently, Delamitri and the Pogues.
Yeah.
The brilliant Wonder Stuff, Blue Tones, Wet. Played with, supported loads, but never quite as big as this.
No.
And never with...
No.
Never with one of my absolute heroes.
Oh, it's
because if you're a songwriter... You know, Elvis sits at the top table.
Without a doubt.
You know, apart from being a mate,
yeah,
and I love him on that side. Yeah. I like learning from him.
Of course. And it's a tour to trust, isn't it? I think it's called. First time I saw Elvis was on the Trust tour in the Empire. I think.
Okay.
79, 80, and again. Wow, yeah. What a journey. I've seen him so many times.
I've seen him many, many times, and I remember he played at the Picket.
Yeah,
I can't. Was it about 10 years ago? There was only 200 people in there, all crammed in. They got a grand piano in.
Yeah.
Alan Toussaint was playing with him.
Wow.
And I'll never forget, he put in one of the top five live performances of any band or anything I've ever seen when he did Deep Dark Truthful Mirror. And I had to be picked up off the floor with its intense beauty. It was just fantastic.
And
that sort of stuff inspires me endlessly.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love that album. I love that around that time, the stuff he was writing. I mean, he's a great singer-songwriter.
And his latest record is great as well.
It is. It's cool.
Kind of listen to him. That's the thing I was saying about Springsteen before. Keeping that standard high is the hardest thing.
He's done so much, hasn't he? What a back catalogue he's got there. Unbelievable.
I know. He won't stop now.
No, not at all. I've seen the set list for the dates he did in the States with Blondie, and I just hope it's around the same kind of stuff. There's loads of stuff from.
I think he's got that many 79. Songs in his armoury. I think, without a shadow of a doubt, you'll be knocked sideways by loads of your favourites.
I know. And you're up and down the country. It's not just Liverpool. It's Southampton, Nottingham.
Well, the main one... we're all over the place. But the main one, I have to say, that I'm looking forward to, when I first got given the dates and I had a sit down and then a drink, is Blackpool.
Yeah.
I can't wait to go to Blackpool because I haven't been since 1989.
Right.
Because I went in 1989... With my then partner and his partner, four of us went, and I found it really grim. I think it was a really rainy day, and Blackpool wasn't at its best, you know. And I just thought, oh, God, because I'd been 100 times before then to see the lights and everything, and go on, you know, on the pleasure beach thing. And I thought, I'm never going to Blackpool again unless I've got a really, really good reason. And this is a really good reason.
Yeah, not off.
So we're going to get in early, and I'm going to go and have a look at it and see how it's doing, because I know it's struggled as a town down the years. But it's going to be lovely, you know.
Yeah. Oh,
and I know Elvis is probably more excited about doing Blackpool than anywhere, because, his dad used to do all of the...
That's right, yeah, I remember.
Down the pier.
Yeah.
So all good. So Blackpool's the one. If you're out there and you want to come and see us on this tour, Blackpool's the one.
I know. Do you know what? I should have tried to get tickets. I'm sure my mate David Nixon's going to Blackpool as well, because he's missing the Liverpool one because he's at another gig. I remember him saying so.
Okay.
I shall look into that. Yeah. So anyway, time for another song. What do you think?
Okay, I'm gonna do a song special. I put this on Facebook before. If anybody wants me to sing a song,
okay.
If you go onto my Facebook, put it on the thread and I'll consider it. Okay. And I'm going to do this especially for David and Leslie Campbell.
Oh, good friends.
Because Leslie's not very well.
Mm-hmm.
She's very ill.
I know.
And
So this is actually going to be...
I love this song, so...
This is going to be live on Facebook, Ian, as well. Okay, so David and Leslie, if you are listening,
yeah,
get on your Facebook page, because...
I'm sure David's listening.
I'm sure David is, yeah. If you can have a little look on Facebook, you will find out that this is going to be done live for you. So...
And this is going to be the opening track of the story of Ian Prowse,
okay,
brand new album. So this is for you, Les.
Absolutely fantastic. That was Home, live on Vintage Radio and live on Facebook, Ian Prowse. Okay, we've had quite a few watchers and listeners. Love to Leslie. Steve Evans, go ahead, Prowsey,
love you,
lad. Gareth Toop, go ahead, Ian. Sandy Cameron is watching. Gareth Waltier is watching. Dave Criddle is watching. Quite a few watchers on there as well. And we'll share this later as well. So thank you all, those who have been watching on Facebook. Keep listening on Vintage Radio for the rest
That's
of
the
session.
It's the first time I've sang in about a month, actually, because I wasn't very well the other week.
Indeed.
I'm finally getting up to speed.
Well, that was great. It sounded really good. And I must say that is the song for me when we do... when we do your Christmas show, and when I go, usually go with our Mike and Joanne, yeah, a few of us, that's the song that gets me. Yeah. You go to that. Your Christmas show is legendary. So you sing to every song. It's the show for me that's got every emotion, and that's the one that makes me cry.
The reason why we put it as the opening track on the story of, Ian Prowse, the new record, is because it's the song which seems to have the most emotional pull for people who support me, you know. I know Does This Train Stop on Merseyside is probably my most famous song, but I get the most messages and emails and lovely things, you know, about home. So I thought we'd put it at the front, you know. I think it deserved that, because I know what it means to a lot of people.
It does mean a lot, and I say
it's an honour for that, so we'll put
beautiful.
It up there,
like. It's fabulous, thank you. So I really enjoyed that, thank you so much for that, and for those who asked for the song to be played as well. And Leslie and David, hope you're listening, hope you enjoyed hope you enjoyed that. We'll catch up
for you
soon.
Les,
well done. Okay, right, so hypothetical question.
Good.
You're going to love this one. We all know about the Monday Club. You do the fabulous job there at the Monday Club. It's great. I don't get there as often as I'd like to because of work commitments, but whenever I've been there, I've had an absolutely great time, and everyone. It's such a great community feeling there. And it's funny because when we came in, I went with our Mike and a friend the other week, and they went to sit in a corner. I said, "You can't sit there, that's Sausage Corner." And he went, "What?" I said, "No." So I had to explain what Sausage Corner was.
Yeah, we need a plaque up there.
But I hope you're listening, Barry and Ronnie. It's such a lovely feel to the Monday Club.
It's a funny thing because we're in our ninth year. And they only gave us 6 weeks to begin with, but we'd set down some very specific rules, or rather I did, you know. My friend who works at the Cavern, John Keats, he said, "Do you fancy doing this?" I said, "No, I really don't. I just don't want to. It's where part of the Monday Club creed comes from. I remember saying to him, "I don't want to watch lads play Sex on Fire or Wonderwall. I have no interest in it." And he kept on at me, and he said, "Okay, how's about you've got 6 weeks, do it, set it up however you want, whichever way." I said, "Okay, we're going to give it an ethos, a name, and I'll use all the contacts I've got to begin something, you know." And it's not just going to be lads with guitars, you know. We're going to try and get as many women into the club as possible. Bands and poets, comedians, creativity of all types, and obviously the key thing about Monday Club, no covers, and it just worked. We had a slight wobble after about 4 months,
right?
But they said to me the numbers aren't quite up. After a brilliant start, did a little thing about that, and it's been brilliant ever since. It's established now.
I mean, whenever I go in, unless you're getting really handy, you're standing at the back. But that's great.
It's funny because some weeks, like on this last Monday, it was quite quiet. But, you know, everybody always gets a go. I'll either cut them down to two songs or whatever. Everybody always gets a go. And there's something different happens every week as well. And for me personally, I don't go down there as like Ian Prowse, the singer, the lead singer in a band. I leave that at the door almost, and I go down there as a music lover.
Yeah,
you know, and I try and help whoever's playing. You know, if they're nervous or whatever, I do my best because I've always treated it with a lot of respect. And they pay me well and all. So
good. That's good. And there's been some absolutely brilliant acts on there as well. I mean, talking about diversity, Rebecca, the poet. How good is she?
Well, we got her up at the Christmas, the big Christmas show.
That's
because
right.
I thought she could really do something.
She's good.
And she did.
Yeah.
She's amazing. I've never seen anything like her. She silences the room every time.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I don't know if she remembers all of them.
She's one cool poet, by the way, if anybody out there wants to check her out.
Yeah.
And of course, I mean, I say this every week, but it's absolutely true. If it wasn't for Barry and Ronnie and the Southbound Attic Band, I don't think it would have lasted as long, because they kind of gave us our famous song, which is Hide the Sausage.
Yeah.
The tale of a gentleman who goes to the chip shop and it all goes dreadfully wrong, and I'm not going to tell you what happens next. You have to come down the Monday Club and hear it. And they play it every week, and every week it works. I always look around at the audience.
It's great.
as they hit the first chorus, and people just love it. The smiles on their faces.
No, it's funny because when I was in there the other week, but I'm like, these these two women came in behind us, and they were a little bit older, and they'd obviously just wandered in off the street and see what was going on, right as the song was coming on. And our kid turned around and said, I don't know if you're ready for this, you know. And they went, the next thing is, anyway, same round, they're singing away to anything.
Oh, no, look, okay, people love it. Great. People love it's it. Brilliant. So they've been, you know, they've been a really important part of the whole thing. And it's developed as well over the years. You know, it's become something really important, mm-hmm. I think. So,
no, that's great.
Yeah, long may it last. We're 10 next year.
I know, it's amazing. It's amazing, isn't it? Honestly, there's been loads through the doors who've jumped up. And I know our Mike is talking about coming down and having a play, so that's on his list of things to do.
You know, as I say at the beginning of the night, we've had... international rock stars have come and played, and we've had people playing their first gigs and everything in between.
You know,
we're deeply inclusive.
Which is great.
And that's the whole thing with it.
Okay. Which leads me to the theoretical question that I've been given, is that there's a new venue open, and it's a tribute night, open mic night, and you've been invited along. Okay. What three cover versions would you play? And then I've got a question for you after that.
Okay.
Well,
Down in the Tube Station at Midnight.
Yeah.
I'd probably play a Redemption song, because I've been practicing a version of that at home alone. And I'd have to do a Bruce song, so I'd probably do something that people wouldn't expect, like State Trooper off Nebraska or something like that. Okay. something really grim. One of Springsteen's miserable songs, you know.
Oh, cool. So, okay, yeah, so my question as a follow-on to that is, if you were to do a Stranglers cover, what would you do?
Now, you see, Stranglers songs are incredibly hard to cover.
Yeah.
Because the way that they wrote the songs, and I've actually spoken to JJ about this, you know, the songs would begin with a bass line.
Yeah.
Which is so unusual, because then, you know, for a song to be led by a bass line, with no chords,
no.
The musicians around you, and they have this brilliant knack of being able to do it. You know, he'd come in and go...
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
So what do you put to that?
I know.
It's just nuts. And so they're very, very difficult to cover. So, but they don't suit the acoustic guitar.
No,
I don't think. No. I'd probably play... wondering what it is. It's 7, 1, 2, or 3, or 4. Get 3 weeks off in a year or more. Save up and get my very own SLR, 'cause I can drive my very own tank. Yes, I can drive my very own tank. Yes, I can drive my very own tank. Yes, I can drive my very own tank.
Absolutely wonderful. You've just made my night. Thank you so much for that.
Probably be Tank.
That was brilliant. Yeah. That's cool. What an album as well, Black and White.
God,
wow.
Yeah,
what an album. Yeah. What a band. Okay, right. So we've spoken about Here I Lie a little bit and what's coming up. So the collection that's coming out, tell us a little bit about that and how people can order it.
Okay, well, I think that...
Story being Prowse, is it?
Yeah, when we got the Elvis Costello tour, we realised we were going to play to, you know, 15,000 people. And I was always going to do a new kind of updated best of. We did one in 2012. But the last decade, we did three new albums. We did Who Loves Your Baby, Compañeros, and Here I Lie. So we added a lot of songs to the canon of which we play live and of which have become really favourite songs. I Did It for Love. My Name is Desi Warren, are all big part of what I do now.
Yeah.
So we were always going to update it at some point in the next year or two. And when the Elvis tour came around, we thought, well, there's going to be, let's be honest, there's going to be plenty of people out there in the auditoriums night after night who haven't got a clue who I am, you know. I'm sure there'll be some hardcore Prousey heads in there and people who have heard my name and maybe heard Does This Train in there. But the majority of people won't have actually sat down and listened to my music. So we wanted to put it all into a compact, you know, a 18 song list and tell a story of Ian Prowse. So and of course the Here I Lie album went so well for us. It's lovely to put some of those new songs on and all. So that's what we did. So it's got songs from, I think there's six Pelé songs. Then there's, you know, about six songs from the mid-ear of Amsterdam. And then the later ones and duets with Elvis Costello and Christy Moore on the record as well. And it's just a really good introduction. And of course, we thought we've got to do something for the fans. So we've recorded a brand new song.
Yes, yeah.
Which I would play for you now, but I'd be scared of messing up the lyrics.
Okay, well, I've heard it and I think it's really cool. So that's good for me. Okay, so people can order that now.
You can pre-order it. I think if you want the vinyl, early last year I signed to Kitchen Disco Records, which is a brand new label out of Soho in the West End in London. And if you saw the Here I Lie promotion, the campaign and the actual album, they just did a fantastic job on all of the visuals of it, and they've done it again. I don't know if you've seen the album cover.
Mm-hmm. I have.
The names of the songs
it's
coming
great.
Up on my face.
Yeah.
I was down in Mont Saint Michel. We took for my birthday. My partner surprised me and took me and our Rosie down there because I put Mont Saint Michel in the song about Rosie when she was born. So I've always wanted to go, and she took us brilliantly. And while I was there, the record company sent me the sleeve as an idea, and I was like, oh god, what happens if I don't like it? How am I going to tell them? And I looked at it and it came as a complete shock. I didn't know. I felt as though I didn't have the wherewithal or enough artistic information about myself to appreciate this piece of design. And I showed it to a couple of people and they all just went, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And then I kind of, when I woke up the morning after and looked at it, I went, oh yeah, it's something special. It was just outside of what I expected and I had to get used to it. And everybody's loved it.
It's great.
You know, they've done a brilliant job. And the whole of the design for the album, especially the vinyl, if you want to get or pre-order the vinyl, I'd do it very soon because they're going really quick. And I know they've got it in this beautiful sleeve, and I signed off on it yesterday, and it's fantastic, you know.
Amazing.
The whole thing, and it's really lovely that it looks so good because it's my life in music, you know.
Yeah,
so they've matched, you know, my dedication to it with their own dedication, so it's lovely.
Great. I'll look forward to that. So when's that actually out? When's it released?
It comes out on the day that we play with Elvis in Liverpool.
Oh, right.
That's the day it comes out. So that's the first time you'll be able to buy it, is if you're at that gig.
Okay.
Unless you pre-order it
and
you'll get it sent to you that week.
Okay.
It'll be out there then.
Great.
And I think it, you know, comes out on all the digital things on 28th of February.
Okay. So we look forward to that. The other thing I was going to talk to you about is the summer gigs you do at the Music Room. Used to be the Roddy Well. I always call it the Roddy. Used to be. I've not missed one of them. They're absolutely fab. And are you going to be doing?
We're going to do.
It's
going to be something different this year as well.
Okay.
Which I'll tell you off air.
Okay.
until it gets announced.
Okay.
But we are doing it. I think it's our 14th year.
Yeah.
Something mad like that.
While, isn't it?
And it's a really different vibe because it's an acoustic thing, and we play a lot of songs that don't get an airing with the full band, and it's probably the most enjoyable evening of the year. It's always warm.
It's a great venue as well.
You know, it's a lovely venue. In fact, today I was listening because we're doing one of the first 150 people to order the Story of Ian Prowse, you're going to get a bootleg of last year's two Philharmonic shows.
Yeah.
And I was listening to them all today to pick which songs we're going to put on it. And I'd forgotten, you know, a lot of the songs, Love Phenomenon and...
Yeah. So it was done over two nights, wasn't it?
Two nights.
I remember.
We did. You Can't Win 'Em All, Mum. Arm in Arm. Some songs that, you know, as you go along and you've written more, that they don't quite get a look in. And it was, it's lovely, you know. So we'll always do that.
Yeah,
we're always going to do
it. It's great. And yeah. The sound in there is amazing as well, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's a absolutely lovely.
And you know, by the end of it, it just turns into a standard Ian Prowse gig and everybody gets overexcited.
I know. Talking of which, you've already announced your Christmas show as well, haven't you, for this year?
Yeah.
I saw that.
Yeah.
12th of December.
Well, you know, we just, it's become such a thing, the Christmas show.
Yeah.
It's almost like it's a huge, big. It's a knees up,
yeah.
But it's like an emotional thing whereby everybody turns up and we all go, right, we all made it through another year, you know, and everybody joins in, and you get a little bit of everything.
It's a fab night. I'll say, you come out of there, it's the gig where you've got a smile on your face all the way through, you're singing, I mean, with Mikey's dancing and everything else that goes.
Well, there's 15 of us on the stage,
I know,
so anything might happen.
I know.
And the one we just did this year, because it was 2 days after a shocking general election result, it had an extra bit of edge to it.
Yeah.
You know, gravitas to
it.
And so we had to pull everybody up.
Yeah.
And we really got stuck in.
Yeah.
But there's always new things happening as you go along. And this year's one will be extra special for me because it will be the end of a whole, the story of Ian Prowse year, where I've been telling the story. Because the solo tour that I'm going to do is I'm going to tell the story of the things I've seen and experienced as a musician, and this will end that. It will be the big end of it, and it will so we'll be playing all those songs. Playing with the horn section is always a joy.
I know. They're really good, aren't they?
Yeah.
I know Florin from the Ragamuffins and First Time I Spoke. There's Florin up there.
Yeah,
he's a cool guy.
Well, you know, Laura McKinley on the fiddle, Fiona McConnell on the
flute.
What
a band.
Just unbelievable.
They are. They're an amazing
Laura
band.
Simpson, brilliant player.
Yeah.
They're a joy and an honour to play with, all of them lot. So,
it's great.
And you never know what's going to happen between now and then.
No, indeed. And so this tour that you're doing as well, the story of Ian Prowse, that's you're doing a lot of different venues there as well. And you're also playing in Rainford.
Yeah. They just asked me. You know,
yeah.
They're trying to get a venue going there at the Junction. I'm playing in places I don't usually play: Rainford and Stroud, Weston Super Mare. Playing in Appletreewick up in Yorkshire. Playing in Perth, and they're just a few of the highways and byways and. You know, of the UK. I'm going down to West Cork. It's a beautiful. It's not even a town. It's a hamlet called Lepp, and they have a venue there where Nirvana played and Christy Moore's played and Damo's played. And I've played there once ages ago with Dan Donnelly, and there's magic down there. So I'm going to play there in Belfast, and I'm playing some of the major centres as well. Playing Manchester, playing London. It's not just going to be me singing the songs. I'm going to tell a few stories I've never told before, like what did happen, how did Pelé split up, you know, what's it like to play with your heroes, and just some things that, you know, people some funny stories and some heart-rending stories and all of that. So it's going to be an evening of that, but obviously a good old sing-along as well.
Okay. So those dates are coming up. In the summer,
it's about a week after I come off the Costello tour.
Wow,
we start.
No break.
Stourbridge, is it somewhere like that? I can't remember.
I'm so looking forward to that. Okay, right. Can we squeeze another song out here by any chance? Can we be really cheeky?
Has anybody asked for?
I've been asked for Joseph. I mean, that's one of my favourites from the album as well, to be honest.
Okay.
But yeah, whatever you fancy playing.
I tell you what, let's do Joseph.
was Joseph. That's one of my favourites off the album, that one.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely brilliant. It's funny because going back, I actually listened and saw Amsterdam before I got into Ellie. The Pelly stuff passed me by for some reason. I don't know why.
Well, it works funny. Another way as well. You know, a lot of people got me in Amsterdam and never knew anything about Pelly.
Yeah.
For one reason or another. And a lot of people watched me in Pelly and didn't know I'd gone on to form Amsterdam.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only in the past 5, 6, 7, 8 years that people have joined up the whole thing and they realise that Pelle is Amsterdam, is Ian Prowse, is Amsterdam, is Pelle.
Yeah.
And it's just a different coat of paint on the car that I'm driving as a songwriter.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why when we put Here I Lie out, we use the same painter, French painter, Paul Delaroche, from 1824, I think. He painted my very first album sleeve. Obviously, he didn't. He wasn't a commission because he's dead. And he painted the last one, Here I Lie.
Yeah.
And we did that to connect the whole two things, the whole lot of things together.
Mm-hmm.
And members of Pelle played on Here I Lie.
Yeah.
Nico, Pelle's fantastic fiddle player, is finally coming out of retirement. She's going to do a couple of shows with me.
Cool.
She's going to play in London. This is on the story of Ian Prowse's acoustic tour. She's going to play in London. She's going to play in Chester. And then she's going to play in Rainford. And that's going to be fantastic.
Wow.
So I spoke to her the other day, and it's just...
That's cool.
You know, just getting to, you know, play those old Pelle songs with that old Pelle fiddle sound is going to be brilliant.
Great,
so
cool.
I consider it that it's... You know, we had 22 musicians play on Here I Lie. So we're just a big... You know, me and Tony Kiley, we'll use anything, we'll do anything, we'll go anywhere, whatever the song requires.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're kind of, I've got 7 or 8 new tunes on the go as well, so
we
never stop.
Good stuff. I'll keep it going. Well, we're delighted to be to have you here as a guest tonight on Vintage Radio, and I want to thank you so much for coming in.
No problem, mate. I'm sorry it took so long. I'm sorry you had to pester me so
that's
often.
That's all right. Everything comes to those who wait, as they say.
Yeah.
Or as the Stranglers said, if you don't ask, you don't care. So,
so
there you go. So we got there in the end, and it's been an absolute privilege and a pleasure to have
you
in the studio. Thank you so much for being part of the Gezi, and I nicked the name the Gezi from you as well.
Because
on one of your shows that you did, you went... We're playing here at Christmas, and you're all on the Gezi, and I went, I'm having that. So I call this the Gezi from there. So there you go. So thank you so much for coming in. Good luck with the tour with Elvis and with the album and everything else you do for the rest of the year. And come back again and see us again soon.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Ian. Cheers, mate. Thank you.